Hello, Kansas City. Hello, America, and hello to the world. This is episode 4 already, if you can believe it, of the Heart and Goal podcast. My name is Nate Bucati. We got a special one today because two of my co-hosts are going to be with me together. So we got a round table, and we're going to have something called Nate's Great Debate coming up with U.S. Men's National Team veterans Benny Failhaber and Graham Zusi. Benny, what's up, man? How are you?
How are you, Nate? I'm just happy to be here. I haven't seen Zeus in about 6 years, so it's just good to see him again.
He's a hard guy to get a hold of, isn't he?
He is. He's a mountain man. Look at that beard.
Yeah. I was camping last week. That's why you didn't see me.
Where did you go camping?
Did like a little bike packing trip. So just got on the bike, packed it up, got out there. I'm not going to tell you where I went.
Yes. Top secret stuff.
Yeah, that's the opposite of what I do. I sit at home all day. So.
Have you ever gone bike packing before?
I don't even know what that is.
He just told you.
You put a big backpack on, you ride a bike somewhere?
No, backpack. You got to load the bike up.
A bike up? Is it an electric bike or?
No. Gosh, Benny, come on.
So you just go out into the wilderness?
Yeah.
We could just talk about this all. We don't need this, do we?
No, I mean, I'm fascinated by what this guy does. Honestly, he's done some incredible trips in the offseason. So let's just start there. We're going to get to some things today. First and foremost, we're still trying to grow awareness for this podcast. We're new. We're trying to make sure that Kansas City and people who will be coming to Kansas City, anybody interested or curious about Kansas City and this World Cup, this is the destination for you. If you missed the first three episodes, make sure you go back and watch and listen to them because they'll give you great context as to what we're doing here and what's coming up with this World Cup coming to Kansas City in the summer of 2026. We've had the KC 2026 CEO Pam Kramer on. We've had Alan Dietrich, who was in charge of all the base camps with the big base camp news coming. We also had Jimmy Conrad, former Kansas City Wizard and U.S. Men's National Team player on. So check those podcasts out. Make sure you like, subscribe, wherever you get your podcasts, and post on social media so we can get the word out to everybody about the show. Today, it's going to be these two guys. We're going to have a little fun going, debating some different topics regarding the USA, Kansas City, the World Cup, all the above. And we're going to give you a little World Cup 101 as well and kind of break down what's coming next because there are more matches still before the World Cup actually comes. We've got more qualifiers coming up in March. But I want to start by going back to the two of you. You both have come to kind of call Kansas City home. Graham, you were a one-club guy. I mean, sporting Kansas City from the start to the finish. Benny, you bounced around a little bit more but seemed to find yourself a home here, as we've already covered in the pod. So what about when you guys met each other? Like, what did you know about Graham Zusi? What did you think about Graham Zusi before you met him, and what was that interaction like?
Well, I'm trying to remember. Had we ever met before I came to play here, other than playing against each other?
We hadn't. And my earliest memory of actually, you know, chatting with you was when I found out that you were coming to Kansas City.
Yeah.
And Peter called me and said, "Hey, you gotta give this guy Benny a call.
Right.
Make sure he's fit for the preseason."
Of course he did.
So I was like,
"Smart man."
He already knew.
Yeah.
So I called Benny up and we just chatted for a few seconds, and I was stoked to have him coming because he had just had a really good year with New England. And,
well, that's not true.
Well, but you had a good year.
I was in New England for a year and a half, and right. The first half year that I was there, I mean, we were a terrible team, but I did have a decent year.
Right.
My second year, I think I didn't have a good year, and the team still wasn't very good, and I think that kind of took the air out of my sails a little bit.
I think you were a little unhappy, and I was just stoked to be getting a player in that position because we really needed it, and a setup guy. And I gave Benny a call, and as naturally as possible to make it seem like it wasn't coming from Peter, I was like, "Hey man, yeah. So what's your off season program looking like?"
What was it? I'm guessing.
You're like, "Dude, I haven't left my couch."
Is that what he said?
Nah, I mean, probably.
Although I will say, I remember those calls. Zeus called me. Jimmy Nielsen called me. I'm not sure if Bees called me, but I had never gotten calls from a future teammate, right? When I signed for a team, and that meant a lot. It was one of those where, okay, this team wants me there. I got to make sure I come in prepared. And I don't know how fit I was when I came in, but I definitely had it in my mind going into that year that was a big season for me and that I wanted to kind of pay back what Peter kind of, you know, in terms of getting me, he had to acquire me back then. And I think at that point they traded like a draft pick for me, which was a big deal back then, right? Mm-hmm. Like the college draft was, yep. I mean, we know how many good players came from the college draft into Kansas City at that time period, including this guy right here. So it was a big deal what they traded for me, and I felt really wanted by the club at that point when Zeus called me, Jimmy Nielsen called me, Bees called me, and it was, I think maybe Kai Kamara called me, and it was a cool thing.
We also had the MO of being like the fittest team in the league, so I'm sure that
sporting
that
fit,
was,
man.
That was in the back of your head as well.
Yeah, yeah.
You had to at least come in halfway decent shape.
At some point during the pod, I'm going to have you retell the story, though, that you started hitting the treadmill at night after training, right? Well, I guess we could tell it now.
The whole season was like a big roller coaster ride because my mindset first was, obviously, I wasn't happy in New England. We hadn't, you know, been successful, and I was at a point in my career where I felt like I needed to go somewhere and compete for championships because my career had been like this the whole time, right? And I was 26 years old, I think, at the time. And I remember telling my agent at the time, I'm like, I need to go somewhere that can potentially win something. And my two top choices were Sporting Kansas City and the Galaxy, which I thought were the two top teams in the East and the West at the time. And obviously I knew Peter. Peter knew me from the U-20s. And, you know, it went pretty quickly at that point when Peter kind of found out I was interested. He was interested in it, and it happened. But the real story doesn't happen really until I get here because, yeah, I knew about all that stuff, right? Sporting fit. I knew what kind of coach Peter was. And I also was aware of, like, what my weaknesses were, right? Fitness was always something that plagued me at times, and I had to always get super fit to play well in – whether it was national team tournaments, whether it was in the leagues that I was playing in at the time. I'm sure I did my best in terms of getting prepared for you know, preseason and the off season, but it's not until you're there, right? Until you realize what it means to be sporting fit, which was something really important back then. I mean, you talk about teams now, like the Red Bulls or St. Louis City when it was high pressing. I mean, Peter's team in 12, maybe even 11. I don't know. You'd be better to talk about than that before I got here. But it was a high-pressing team, and it was the first one of its kind in MLS.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I got here, I started feeling that, and I was like, dude, I can't play 90 minutes like this. It was impossible. And so long story short, the season started off okay, dipped down. I lost my starting spot after like 10 games or so because I wasn't fit enough, and I wasn't doing the transitional element of the game that Peter, you know, as always asked his players to do. And it really wasn't until the playoffs that I earned my starting spot back. And it was because I don't know exactly when, but when I lost my spot, I decided, hey, I need to get fitter, and I'm not going to get it from just practice. So twice a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays afternoons after training, obviously go to training in the morning, come back home, I take a nap. And then when I wake up, I go to 24-hour fitness and get 45 minutes on the treadmill and try and run, I think, 6 miles, 10K. And so it was, for me, it was tough. And that kind of build that base, so to speak. And I would come in. There's some games that I'd start during that time period, some games that I'd come in off the bench. But it wasn't until the playoffs that I really started playing as a starter again. And obviously, Peter loves this story where the first game that I started again was New England. We had lost the first game 2-1 on the road. Yeah. And the second leg, we came back, and it went into overtime. And so I played 120 minutes after not really starting consistently. And in the 100th and 10th minute or whatever was a play where I ran to steal the ball off Diego Fagundes, then dribbled it all the way down the line, and then crossed it into Claudio Bieler to get the game winner that game. So that was like the big moment where Peter looks at it and is like, hey, finally it paid off in terms of the mentality part getting through to him and also the physical endurance part. So it was a good moment there.
And then, of course, he gives you the told you.
Yeah, of course. It was always Peter. Right. Peter did it. Yeah, exactly.
I actually, that was the first game that I ever worked for Sporting Kansas City. I was a season ticket holder, but because it was a first-round playoff game, it wasn't on national television, and they called me and asked me to do the sidelines for that game. So I got to be standing on the sideline when you made that play, and of course Seth scored the goal that sent it
kept
to
us
extra
in.
Time.
Yeah. Right.
But I remember through that process of talking to Peter all the time, because I mean, the fans were like, why is Benny Failhaber on the bench? You know, why is this guy not starting? You bring him in. And he would tell me, even when you were on the bench, we brought him here because he can do something that nobody else on our team can do. He can see that pass. He can make plays to get that goal that we haven't had. And you just mentioned it, right, Graham? And then, boy, after that, I remember him telling me the same thing. He's like, that's it right there. That's why we needed him that fit, because when he makes that play, he can make the pass that then leads to the goal. And then, of course, you had the one to Dom in the conference final as well, the little scoop pass. So I want to go back to the personality part, though, Graham, because you guys are such different characters. We established that a little bit with the bike packing and the not so much bike packing. When I would go to training, you'd always hear Benny's voice. Benny had opinions about what everybody on the field is doing, and he was going to let you hear it. Some guys could handle that. Some guys would you know, have a tough time with it. As a guy that's quieter yourself, what did you think of his kind of, you know, I don't know what the right word is. Like his
just say it, Nate. What is it? Well, what's the right word?
Opinionated nature. You know, like, what did you think of
that? That just wasn't on the field, Nate.
Yeah,
Benny's,
right.
Benny's opinion about pretty much everything. But no, I it didn't rub me the wrong way at all. You need players like that on the field. And I would go as far as to say that I am quite opinionated on the field, but it's just off the field that I kind of am able to get away from that and chill out.
Yeah.
I just cared that there were people who cared as much as I did. I do remember when I kind of made some of my transitions back into the right back, and we would have a transition moment in the game. I wouldn't even know where Benny was, but I would just I would just scream his name, because I feel like just getting that little like ding in his head to track back. Like, Benny, get back! And he could have been running back for all I knew, but I would just immediately scream his name, because I think just that little click in his head helped.
I mean, I don't remember that, but if I heard something, I would for sure be moving in the direction that I'm supposed to. Right. It's almost like an alarm clock, right? Time to wake up, man.
So I want to ask kind of your impressions of Graham. You know, what did you think of him? Did you have, because one thing I know about you too, when it comes to opinions, you're scouting the whole team when you're playing a game. So you had thoughts on the guys. Did you have thoughts on him as a player? And what did you think of him once you got here and started working with him on a daily basis?
Yeah, I mean, look, I played in the league for a year and a half, and even before I started playing in MLS, I already watched it. So I knew Zeus. I mean, he'd scored some pretty important goals and some, I want to say, did you win goal of the year with that one that you scored on Hartman? I feel like that was the year before I got here.
I don't think so. No, I never won goal of the year.
Okay, but I remember seeing that goal, obviously, and I think that puts, like, you know, Zeus's name on you know, every MLS website or whatever. And so, anyways, yeah, did I know who Graham Zeus he was? Of course. I knew the whole team before I got here, right? At least all the guys that had been here and played with regularity. And, you know, Zeus was one of the big reasons why I wanted to come to Sporting. It was, you know, the top players on the team, the quality that the team had in itself. I mean, we played against Sporting Kansas City, I want to say, in that 2012 season, and got thrashed 3-0 during St. Patrick's Day. Where CJ scored, Kai scored, they wore the hats, Zeus didn't doing like that. And I was like, dude, I want to be part of that, right? Like, I want to be part of all of it. It's the winning. I remember that game as well. There was a moment where it was already 3-0 and Chance ran all the way forward to try and get a fourth goal, and they didn't score. And as he's like trying to get back now, Peter's almost like laughing at him. He's like, yeah, dude, yeah, no problem. Go get the fourth now, get your ass back, right? And so it's like the whole thing is everybody's having fun. Everybody's enjoying it. People are winning. Zeus is calling people out for too much celebrating. Like, it's just, it's perfect, right? Everybody wants to win. Everybody wants to find success. And so, did I know the guys that I was coming to play with? For sure. And you know, playing with Zeus was always going to be something that would be exciting. At that time, he played almost kind of like a front three. I think you played on the right side. Sometimes in the middle.
Played on the left as well.
Play on the left? Yeah. But yeah, I remember guys that up front would benefit from things that I could do in the midfield, right? Okay. The ability to have balls in behind. I know CJ's going to run. Kai's going to run. Zeus is going to run. Guys are going to make runs for the types of passes that I can make. And so all that had gone into my thinking in terms of why I think I would fit here. And that doesn't even go, I think one of the greatest strengths of that team was the locker room, right? I don't think you win championships 100%. Without a locker room, unless you're the most talented team in the world, which isn't going to happen a lot of times in MLS regardless, right? And back then, even more so because of the parity. And so I think the biggest thing that we had was We had such a good locker room. We had different personalities, but it's what Zeus said. We all wanted one thing, and that was to win above all else, right? And so nobody was really selfish. If anybody was selfish, the other guys would stomp on that real quick. And we had everybody was about the same age in their mid-20s, other than Jimmy. Jimmy was like the team dad.
Yeah.
But he was also a guy that was incredibly like loved by everybody, right? And so everybody kind of, you know, was a leader of sorts. And we had the one captain, but a bunch of leaders underneath that. And I think it really worked well.
Since we talked about opinions, you have opinions.
Do I?
And you do too. And we're going to pretend you're on the field again here, Graham, because you're going to have to come up with some opinions. We've got a new segment on the show. We're going to call it goal or no goal. You know, they got the new technology with the watches now where if the ball crosses the line, you can look at your watch and decide. We don't have that kind of technology here. So we're going to do a little debate segment where we've got some questions. One of us will be posing the question, and then the other two are going to have to make their case. The person posing the question is going to decide who gets the goal.
Yeah.
All right? So, and then we'll keep track. We'll keep score. And see how we do. Does that all make sense?
Makes sense.
Good with this? Okay. All right. So Benny, since you're the facilitator here, you know, you get to go first.
I'm gonna start with this one because, Well, for one, Zeus is part of the question, so it's better that he doesn't get to or he doesn't get to judge it.
Right.
And I like your opinion on that as well. So Mount Rushmore of Sporting Kansas City all-time players, and I'll tell you mine, and then you guys can pick yours, and I'll be the judge. So mine would include Beasler, Zeus, Preki, and Kerry Zavagnin. We were talking about this before. Mm-hmm. Peter would be an honorable mention, but mostly as a coach and a leader and not so much as a player. So Kerry makes that list. So Zeus, Beasler, Preki, and Kerry Zavagnin. Go ahead. What is your pick?
Yeah, I'm gonna change two on you. I think Bees and Zeus are just like stone cold
locks. It's already etched.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, those are stone cold locks. There's no debating that. And it's Preki is a tough one to take out because he was the only two-time MVP in the league until Messi came around and did it.
Who?
Some guy from Miami. But I'm going with Peter Vermes and Tony Meola instead of Kerry Zavagnin and Preki.
Wow, Kerry just off to the side.
And
wow.
Well, listen.
You benched him.
I love we've got our first all these guys. Yeah, I love all these guys. But when you look at the team that deserves the most credit in the organization's history that doesn't get it is that 2000 team. They won the double. They won the Supporter Shield. They won MLS Cup. It didn't get the type of attention. I went to cover that the celebration they had, which was in a tent outside of Arrowhead Stadium with a bunch of fans that showed up. It was not. It just didn't register the way that it did. Like, for example, when you guys won in 2013, we had that massive celebration at Union Station. But Tony Meola was the MVP and of the season, I believe, and of MLS
Cup. And the only goalkeeper to ever win it, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if you go back and watch that game, he was the MVP of that game. It was one of the most phenomenal.
I have watched that game.
Yeah, right? Same.
A million percent. He had like six stops from like 3 yards out.
Yeah.
It was outrageous.
But you put Peter on there. He was playing that game. Was he not defending?
That's a good point.
That's a fair point. But I've got to work with Tony a lot calling games over the last few years. And when I talked to him about that team, he said, Peter Vermes was why we won. He was the guy that set the tone for everybody on that team, and you guys played for him, so I think you understand that. And I'm going to put his managerial and technical director career in why he's on that Rushmore as well. You're talking about both he and Kerry being a part of over 80% of the games in the club's history. But Peter was the guy that's fingerprints were all over the academy system, the team that the roster was built with you guys. He's got to be on the Rushmore because he's as responsible for everything that's happened in Kansas City up until this point as anybody. So those are the only two changes I make.
All right. Well, I don't hate any of that.
I think the first question for you is you're going to keep yourself on the Rushmore.
I got to kick myself out.
Come on.
No chance.
The guy that led the team in minutes and games played
but
all that.
But that's the reason why he's on there is because he take himself off.
Right.
I'm kind of with Benny. I feel like I gotta throw Kerry on there just because he's been a part of everything and he's won everything and really, he's been here longer than anyone. But I'm going to throw a little bit of a curveball in there.
Here we go.
Oh, boy, I'm ready for this.
I'm going to throw Roger Espinosa on, man.
Oof.
That's a great shout.
Is it? He wasn't here for 2013.
He wasn't.
I let him know it, too.
But he was also winning an FA Cup. So we'll give him a little bit of a slide for that.
With Wigan.
With Wigan.
Who did they beat? Manchester United? Manchester City. Yeah, yeah. Decent.
The reason I put Roger on there, even though he missed our MLS Cup, is I feel like he's been possibly the most underrated player in MLS history, not even sporting history. He's been just so important to all of our teams that have been successful, on the field, off the field. We talk about good locker rooms as well. Just the best teammate you could possibly want on your squad. And and he's such a good soccer player, so smart on the field. He made my job so much easier. My transition to right back, I swear, was successful because of Raj and Ike Opara.
they called him Red Card Roger. He would get yellow cards a lot. He would get some red cards. He was such a physical player that it almost became a reputation that people didn't understand how good he was at actually playing the game of soccer. Do you think that is part of why he was underrated?
Yeah, he definitely got that reputation. Maybe deserved early on, but it stuck with him, and it, to me, it was undeserved, especially later on in his career. But yeah, no, I think there was a stigma against him. I think the refs saw Roger and just assumed every tackle was him flying in. But severely underrated, exceptional player, very technical, could do the dirty work as well, and scored some phenomenal goals.
And just to add to that, too,
yeah.
I didn't play with Roger when I came in 2013. You guys had already played with him, right, in 2012 and before. Right. And so I had a little bit of that idea of Roger, that he was like that guy. He's the... in hockey, there's
the enforcer.
The enforcer. Right, the guy that comes and fights somebody.
Or the goon, they would say, yeah.
And so that was my impression of Roger a little bit. And when he came to Sporting in 2014 now, I mean, I started seeing a completely different idea of what I had, right? And his ability to play the pass, to make a dribble, to use his body to get out of some tight situations. It wasn't just I'm a really hard worker, I'm a good tackler, yes, I get some yellow cards and break things up every once in a while, but the aspect of with the ball, the intelligence, that kind of thing, I mean, yeah, for me, it was a completely different Roger than I anticipated seeing. And he was, I mean, my best year professionally, bar none, was 2015, and I attribute that to two people, and that's Roger and Sony Mustafar. Those two guys were always in the right spots defensively. They ran their ass off while I was able to pick up better spots on the field for us in transitional moments, and they would find me in good spots as well. So it wasn't just the one aspect of the defensive work. It was how do we position ourselves together? How do we find the ball into certain pockets? How do we extend plays and open up the game so that I could be successful? And I mean, man, those two guys were kind of like what he was talking about, Roger and Ike for him. That year for me, Roger and Sony were just, they made everything that I became that year possible, essentially. So yeah, man, he has a completely different skill set than I think what a lot of people see in him.
Okay, so Roger.
So yeah, we've kind of digressed a little bit, but I'm throwing Roger, Bees. I'm going to throw Carey on there as well. Do I have to just stick to four?
Yeah,
that's the Rushmore.
You can't expand Mount Rushmore.
Okay, so I've got Bees, Raj, Carey. I'm gonna go Preki. He's a good player. Yeah.
Now I got a judge.
Yeah, who wins?
Man, it's not easy. It's not easy, but it's also easy because you're missing the number one player, Zeus, and yourself. So I got to go with Nate. Nate gets the goal.
Yes. Buchanan 1-0. Technicalities. Yeah.
Okay, great.
And I like that you put Peter in there, too. I do think that, I mean, look, We were there, bro. I mean, he was he made it all possible for what we were able to achieve as a team when we were players. And yeah, it does kind of say Mount Rushmore or Sporting Kansas City players, but I like that you went a little bit of a different route and added the leadership role, the technical director role, and I think that Peter probably
deserves
it, yeah.
For sure. All right. Next question. I'm gonna take this one.
Let's do it.
We're gonna shift to international soccer. I'm going World Cup favorites. I'm going to say Spain is the favorite to win the World Cup this year. Prove me wrong.
You want to go first? Who do you got?
Do you agree? I mean, Spain are favorites to win the World Cup.
Are they?
in the betting market, I believe. I think it's Spain, and then the next four was Argentina, Brazil, France, and England in some sort of order.
Yeah.
I think France is the likeliest team. I think Argentina is going to have a tough time. Argentina, as much as I think they're one of the top teams and obviously are the defending champions, everybody on that team is pretty much 4 years older now, right? And I think it's, and obviously Messi is not only 4 years older, but he's 39, I think. And so it'll be tough for that team to duplicate what they were able to do. Spain is an incredibly talented team. I think maybe Lamine Yamal is the best player in the world already. I think it's between him and probably Mbappe. But I think there are still some young players on that team and inexperienced. They haven't obviously won it before. The guys that won it with Spain in 2010 are all retired. And so I think it's going to require something special for them.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas France has done it. They've been there before. They've won it. Most of their top players are experienced players that play at very high levels and have won championships with France at the international level. And so, yeah, man. And they got to the finals last year. They have everything last year, 4 years ago.
I saw a depth chart of France's team.
It's incredible.
It is insane. Yeah.
It seems like there's a top French player on more than one on every top club team in the world. So I'm going to go with France. And they have that continuity as well. I'm assuming, I think Deschamps still the coach.
I believe so,
So they've been together for 8+ years, maybe even longer. And so I do think that plays a factor as well.
Yeah, I think the French roster is the best. I think Spain has gotten back to that point where they've got the Barcelona midfielders. They've got all these little guys that are just incredible midfielders. Just it almost is like they just grow them, you know, they're all over the place. And so I do think you put that with Lamine Yamal, that's a really good team as well. But I'm going to take Argentina, and I'm going to tell you why. Okay. Location. We know they're in Kansas City, so first of all, they're going to get the best training facilities. They're going to be in the best location, so that's a plug for Kansas City. But in all seriousness, I think climate's going to matter. Watching the Club World Cup last year and seeing all the European teams throw a fit over having to play games in the day, in the summer, in the United States, I don't know if you guys saw, but some of the teams, their benches did not come out and sit in the stadium during the games. They stayed in the locker room because it was too hot. And I got news for all those European teams when they come here and play in June in Kansas City and New York and places like that. And I just think the Argentina side is not going to freak out about it. I think, and they still, when you talk about too deep, I mean, you look at the strikers that they have. You're talking about guys at Atletico Madrid and Inter Milan and places like that. They've got too deep pretty much everywhere. And I think they've got the kind of midfielders that, even though Messi, I think he's the one kind of player that at his age can still be what he is. Because it's not predicated on brute speed or strength. And let's be honest, he walks when they don't have the ball. He doesn't have to do any work. And that's the way you want it with him. You want him to come alive when his team gets the ball. So I don't think they're as reliant on him. I think they're going to be buoyed by the fact that they're in the Americas. And I don't think they're going to freak out about the weather. And I just think those European teams are not going to like it here. And when push comes to shove, that's going to be the difference.
They are both valid points. I am just going to take myself with Spain. No,
you don't get to give yourself a point, Graham. You got to give one of us a point.
I do think that the weather point is a valid one. And I had that thought when you were talking about France. But I, for the sake of Nate not going away in a landslide here.
Yeah, that's...
Plus, I'm going to give this point to Benny. Right.
And look, Zeus was going to pick Spain, which means that he doesn't see the climate one as a big factor there, Nate. So.
Yeah, Spain, it's sunny in Spain.
Yeah, there's warm parts of Spain. That's true. All right, we'll move on to number three. I get to ask this question, and I think a lot of us have gotten swept up in the Olympics a little bit. The U.S. women's and men's hockey teams take home the gold. And I was... watching an interview with the guy that scored the game-winning goal for the U.S. men, and in the right after the game was
without
over,
the tooth,
yeah, he was missing a tooth, right, man. He put it all on the line, and he was talking about how unified the team was, not just in the locker room, but the organization as a whole. And he was talking about the former players, the U.S. hockey team that had won the gold back in 1980, and all these other guys that made them feel like this was a part of a family, and this was there was a unity all the way throughout. And as I was hearing him say that, I was thinking about the last few years and what has really been the exact opposite when it comes to the U.S. men's national team in soccer. You've got alums doing podcasts, but you've got there seems to be this sense of tension and bickering between the former players and the current player pool right now. And I want to know, can we fix it? Do we need to fix it? And if so, how do we fix it? And I'll start with you, Benny.
Can we fix it? Oof. I don't know if we can fix it. I think things happen naturally a lot of times, and I can't dive into every factor as to why, you know, within the hockey scenario it is one way, and within, you know, the soccer scenario it might be a different way. But there's so many tiny little factors that go into it. It's not only the alums that have an opinion. It's not only the current players that maybe have an opinion as well, or maybe don't see the national team in the exact same way that the alums did 20, 30 years ago. I think, time changes, the culture changes, everything changes, right? I think the more important question is it important to change or not? Is it necessary? I don't think so. I think sports is such a phenomenon, right? And so you think about the hockey scenario. Well, there's the unity, right? There's the unity between the alums and the current players. And, you know, that builds kind of that strength and that desire to go out and play at the best of your level and bring it back home and be proud of the country and the ex-players. And that's great, right? There's also something to be said about everybody outside this locker room doesn't care about us. And it's us against the world. And we've seen that play out in a positive way many times before, right? And so if I'm a player within the locker room, you know, the 23 guys that make the World Cup team, or 30, is it 23 or 30? I don't even know. Anyways, the roster that makes the World Cup team, and there's still that outside noise coming in from, you know, alums of negativity, and this isn't good enough, and they're not thinking about what, and they're not playing for the shirt, whatever, right? All whatever the complaints are, I think you can come together and be like, you know, screw all that outside noise. We're here. No one knows what we go through, right? And that's true. No one knows what you're going through. Even if I've lived it before, or Zeus has lived it before, we don't know what they're going through at this current time. It's a World Cup in the U.S., right? It's bigger than it's ever been since 94, but it's bigger than 94 as well, with how much the game has grown in this country, and how much more accomplished the players are on the national team today. So it's a different scenario, and the ability that they have to come together despite all that outside noise, I think could be a real positive as well. And so I think sports is how you spin it, right? And how you use it, how you use any positive, any negative, how you utilize all those things in a way to help you win and be successful. And so, and I think they'll do that, right? And I think Pochettino will use that. I think the players will use that. The leaders will use that. And I don't think it's something that necessarily needs to change.
I really wanted to disagree with Ben. Yeah, I really did. And I don't. Overall, I don't disagree with you. What I will say is that the alumni and the pundits that we're seeing, the ones that are visible, I think it's almost a fake bitterness. I think they're doing it because they want clicks. It's the same thing with all media to me right now.
Do you think there's a responsibility to be supportive of the guys right now?
I'm a fan, so I want them to do well. And like everyone, when I watch a game, I see the positives and I see the negatives, and I think that there's room for improvement, but I don't think it's helpful for the alumni to compare and bash different generations and different cultures. Yeah, I don't see any real positives in that. I think you can be a fan. You can have your opinions, but like Benny said, no one knows what's going on in that locker room except the people in it. And to pretend that you do, based on your own experience 4, 8, 12, 20 years ago, it's irresponsible, I think.
I'm going to give the point to Graham.
Oh, are you?
Yeah.
Shocker.
So it's 1-1-1.
I just stole everything Benny said.
I like that. Well, I think we all agree what really matters is that the locker room itself is unified. You know, it would be great if everybody from, you know, past to present was singing Kumbaya together and all the same page. That would be great. But the bottom line is that the locker room needs to be unified. But I like your message there. Let's get some support behind these guys.
Well, do I think that there's benefit of including alumni? Absolutely. I think in all aspects, club and country, there's benefits to that. But to compare, it's unnecessary.
All right, you ready? You're
am I next?
Is that right?
Yeah. You tell me what to do, Nate.
Yeah.
All right, here we go. we'll stick with the U.S. Men's National Team for now in the World Cup. And the current U.S. Men's National Team ceiling, right,
yep,
in terms of how far I think that they can progress. And I'll go in between, right? You know how when you do the betting odds, you do over 8.5, over under 8.5 games,
right,
in the NFL, whatever. I'm going to go, their ceiling is round of 16, quarterfinals. Anything beyond the round of 16 is almost...
They've exceeded expectations.
Anything less, they've maybe met it or haven't. What do you guys see there?
I'll start. I'm going to say that their ceiling is higher than the round of 16.
Really?
Yeah. I think with this extended version of the World Cup, 48 teams now, I think a round of 16 should be the absolute goal and really minimum for me. I think they should win their group with the group that they have. I know it's not complete, but they should win their group, which gives them not a cakewalk. No game's a cakewalk in the World Cup, but it gives them a lower seeded,
probably a third place team.
Which again, they should win
in the round of, that would be the round of 32.
Right,
round of 32. They go on to the round of 16, which you're going to face a good team, no question about it. At that point, you're playing on home soil. You've got the country behind you, and anything can happen in those games. You know, we put two goals in the first 10 minutes of the game because the fans are going nuts. And then you ride it out, and then you're in the round of 8. I think the round of 16 is a realistic and reasonable goal to get to, but I don't think it's their ceiling.
Yeah. Where do you think that they can get to? What do you think is their ceiling?
I think ceiling is round of 8 more realistically, okay, yeah, for me.
I'm going to be really crazy and say I think the ceiling is a semifinals.
So both you guys are going the over here.
Yeah, I think they make it to the round of 16, they've met expectations.
Okay.
They make it to quarterfinals, they've exceeded expectations, but a famous man named Benny Failhaber once told me that you set your goals a little bit higher than you think you're even capable of because you'll surprise yourself sometimes.
Sure.
And I take that climate into consideration. These guys all understand what it's like to play in the United States during this time of year. And I also think this, like the talk of golden generation stuff should be dead and buried now. That's not a thing. Oh, you look at all these young guys and they're playing in top five leagues in Europe. It's the first time ever that the whole lineup is made out of guys from top five leagues in Europe. But at the time, they didn't carry big responsibilities on those teams. They were bench players. They were role players. And I think 4 years later, some guys have progressed and some guys haven't. But I look at Weston McKennie scoring massive goals in Champions League games and Christian Pulisic having to, you know, carry the responsibility of being the best guy on one of the most rabid fan base teams in the world. And I think these guys have grown a little bit. I think they've grown in their leadership and their understanding. I don't think the moment's going to be too big for a lot of these guys. So I'm not predicting a semifinal, but I think they can make it there. I think if the matchups fell the right way and they play the way that they should and they take advantage of being at home, they can get there. So that's my ceiling.
All right. Well, now as the judge here, I have to take that all into consideration, yep. Nate. And I love to be the eternal optimist that you two are, but you know how I am, right? I'm more of a realist. People call me a pessimist, which is incorrect, by the way. People are all eternal optimists, as I've come to know. And I actually really like what you said, Nate, and I'll tell you why I really like what you said. You look at South Korea. They got to the semis, mm-hmm. right? And I want to say there was another World Cup recently that there was, maybe it wasn't the host country, but there was also was it Turkey in 2002 as well? Or there was somebody.
Turkey made a heck of a run.
Right?
Croatia made the
Croatia's been to the finals a couple times. So I think there is, the precedent has been set for a host country or maybe a not big, big name country getting to the semis. It happens. And I think that the U.S. have the ability to. However, I think the fact that there's 48 teams makes that harder because you got to win one extra playoff game mm-hmm. to get there. And I think that's what's hard. It's the consistency of it, right? It's the ability to win the game that you're supposed to in the round of 32. It's the ability to beat a like-for-like team in the round of 16. And then it's the ability to probably beat a better team than the U.S. in the quarterfinals to make it to the semi. So I'm going to go with Zeus. I think the quarterfinals is a very lofty goal. If we get there, I think that's an exceptional feat. Is it possible to get to the semis? I wouldn't say it's impossible, but I think it's unlikely enough for me to give the goal to Zeus here. So two goals for Zeus.
You're just mad at me because I didn't pick you last time.
Well, that too. That too.
No matter how much I pander. All right, Graham, you're up next.
All righty. Going to make a shift back to Sporting KC.
Yes, here we go.
All right. This one's fun. I like this one. Okay. Of all the players to leave SKC in their primes, I'm going to say Aiko Parra leaving was the most impactful.
Am I going first?
It's up to Graham here.
Let me go first, Zeus.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, I pick Aiko Parra too. Your turn. Good luck winning this one.
Yeah, you just agreed with the host. Timeout. You just agreed with the host. That's not fair. That you got to do something else. Yeah.
I mean, but
that's fine. I'm happy to argue the case. Go ahead.
Okay.
Make your case.
I won't say I think Ike is clearly the answer, just FYI. But I'll try and make a different one, I guess. Oh man. I'll go with Boos.
That's a great shout.
I'll go with Boos.
It's a great shout.
I think that he was a guy that would have been kind of that next generation, homegrown, kind of had been here for a while, had learned from the older guys. And I think it would have been really important for a guy like that to kind of have that continuity within the group. But it would have been great to keep a guy like that. I think he has all the personality traits of being a really good leader and a guy that kind of carries over a lot of the culture that we have built in the early 2010s. And I think it's unfortunate, obviously, that he left for Sporting. And I think we see a little bit of, you know, the negative impact, let's say, of not having a guy kind of carry over from that, right? So I'll go with Busio for that reason.
It's a great shout, too, and it's why the calendar flip is going to be big, because right now the way the calendar works in MLS, you end up in the primary transfer window for everybody else selling a player in the middle of the season when you're you're built a certain way, and then all of a sudden, and to me, the number six in Peter Vermes' system, that 4-3-3, was such an important job because you almost had to do the work of two players. He had the legs for it, but he also had the vision to connect those passes and things like that, and when you lost that in the middle, then it makes it difficult for everybody else to be at their best. So that's why I'm going with Ilie Sanchez.
You're supposed to be arguing against me. I thought you were just helping me.
I am.
You were helping me.
It's a good point. It's a good point. It's just not as good as mine.
No, but that's bad lawyering right there, though. But go ahead. Now you can do the Ilie.
He's so confident.
I know, right?
Yeah. No, but Ilie was the guy that tied everything together for Sporting Kansas City, and they didn't have a replacement for him. And I understand that it was expensive to let him go. But you see him go to L.A. and immediately they win an MLS Cup. He hits the game-winning penalty. And it was just so important to the way that Sporting Kansas City played. And he understood that system so well and was so well built for it that, to me, that was a big loss that they never replaced. So that would be the biggest one for me.
Again, I like both those answers a lot. Benny, to your point about Boos, you know, there's a big batch of those young players that year or those couple of years that he came in.
Yeah.
But he seemed different mentally, physically. And him moving on is fantastic for him. And I think he made the right choice. I would have loved to see what he could have done in those next few years with the club. And then Nate, Ilie to me is not one of those players that just he makes everyone around him better. Mm-hmm. Again, my proximity to him on the field was pretty close, especially in the right back days. So I saw day in and day out the importance of having him on the field. The reason I'm going to go with Nate and Ilie is for that reason of having him around for as long as we did. And seeing his extended impact with the club, I just wish I would have seen more of that with Boos.
All right, guys, my turn. And I get to pit you guys against each other.
Love it.
2010 World Cup for you in South Africa that had the famous Landon Donovan goal.
Oh, yeah.
2014, your World Cup team, Graham, that played and survived the group of death in Brazil. Head-to-head, who wins? And I'm starting with you, Graham. You have to pick your team.
Well, clearly, I'm not going
to. You have to pick. I'm not letting you be humble this time.
Why do I pick my team? Listen, I think you look at the 2014 group, a lot of the same players that the 2010 group had, but just better.
and older.
Yeah.
A little older, a little wiser.
No more, Landon on that
closer,
team, by
closer
the way.
To their prime.
You're already making the case for me, so, Nate.
Yeah, well. Not having Landon was a bummer for sure. But no, that group was it added some key pieces that were just kind of like little sparks, like Jermaine Jones scoring against Portugal. I mean that's just like a that goal in itself.
Amazing.
Puts us in a different category. Those key players that provided something different, no doubt about that. 2010 team, the camaraderie that group had was next to none. The type of team that you like wish you were on for sure. But I think we added some different pieces that put us over the top.
I think one thing that our team had in 2010 was the camaraderie. We were incredibly tight. We had played together for probably, you know, 3-4 years. We had the year prior going to the Confederations Cup in 2009 and getting all the way to the finals. Mm-hmm. And we found who we were in that tournament a year before. We were a team that was incredibly tough to beat. We had incredible resilience. We had ridiculous counterattack with the speed. And look, from 2009 to 2010, I will say that, you know, obviously Charlie Davies had that accident in between one and the other, which definitely stymied a little bit of our attack. I still give Charlie crap for that in saying that, man, you were one of our biggest pieces. And Obviously, you weren't there for the 2010 World Cup. We would have loved to have you there because I think the team would have been quite a bit different with him. But we went through some incredible building blocks, I think, throughout those three years before the World Cup. And then we got to the World Cup. We went down against England, got a little bit of a lucky goal to come back, 1-1. Went down 2-0 against Slovenia, needing at minimum a draw to stay alive. Not only got the 2-2 draw, but scored a goal that got disallowed by Maurice Adou that would have won the game. And then we go to Algeria, which Algeria was legitimately at the end of the game playing for a draw to eliminate both of us. Both of the teams would have been eliminated with a draw, and they just wanted to eliminate the U.S., and obviously we fight until the end to get that goal that puts us into the next round. So we come from behind in every single scenario. So I think we had so many different ways of winning, right, and fighting and being resilient. And obviously I think we get knocked out in a little bit of an unlucky way against Ghana. But, man, that team was fun to play in, fun to play with. I think people believed in us in terms of getting the job done and finding a way. And so I do think that if we were pitted against 2014, whether they took the lead or not, I don't think they would have won it after 90 minutes.
I mean, if we're going to go game to game,
their resume is a lot better than yours.
We broke the Ghana curse.
Ghana, they got a goal in 30 seconds and then sat on it until they got scored on. And then
they beat Ghana.
We beat Ghana. Okay, go ahead. I mean, I can't argue.
Against Portugal.
We should have beat Portugal.
Had the lead, right?
No, we were down against Portugal.
Were you?
But you also didn't have the lead.
Were you down 1-0, then up 2-1, and then gave up the goal? And then lost to Germany 1-0.
Lost to the eventual champions, only 1-0. I think Brazil lost, 7-1 that year? So we basically beat Brazil 6-0.
And then you played 5-10 Howards in goal against Belgium.
Timmy stood on his head that day, for sure.
So I get to pick here. The resume for Graham's side is better, but I got to go with Benny on this. I just do. I think he built the case.
I like that I won, but wait, I really like, you know me and arguing, right? So I can't even take my win sitting down. But why is their resume better than ours? We got to the finals of the Confederations Cup a year prior.
I'm just talking about World Cup.
Okay,
Confederations Cup is nice, but I mean,
so they're just,
we're talking about the World Cup.
Yeah, you're talking about the team. You're not talking about just the performance. Like, the team was able to achieve other things.
Take
as well.
Your win and be happy, Betty. Just calm down.
I'll just be quiet.
I ended up with two. You ended up with two.
I think we all ended up with two.
Yeah, what's the tiebreaker, guys?
It's a draw. Well, I guess we'll sort it out later. We'll sort it in post.
Let's do a fitness test.
I might take second.
Probably would. We know who's going to get first. The guy that goes bike camping. All right. On to five aside. This is where we do a little draft here. We're going to do a draft, and we have to have our cheat sheets here because there's a lot to go with here. We're going all-time U.S. men's national team kits.
Oh, I didn't know it was a snake draft.
So it was a snake draft, and we'll start it, Benny, and then we'll come this
way. Oh,
Benny,
I get to go first?
You get to go first. You get the number one overall.
The big thing about the snake draft, though, is you got to be smart, right? Because I got to know what you guys want to pick.
Yeah.
All right, so with that, I'll take the 2012 Waldo.
You son of a gun. This is the kit, the Waldo kit. Branding matters. You can get me started on it right here, but it matters. When you look at the national teams that are powerhouses for the most part in the world, you know when you see the Argentina kit, that's them, the blue and white stripes. Yep. When you see the Netherlands, orange head to toe, that's them. When you see the Brazil kit, you know it's them. They make little tweaks to it, but that's the kit. This is the kit for the United States. It should be the primary kit. Go get crazy as you want with the secondary kits. But the American flag Waldo kit, it's the stars and stripes. It's what our flag is. It's unique. No one else in the world wears it. Make it happen, American soccer. That should be our kit. So, yeah, that's the number one pick.
Let's just all agree on that.
Okay.
Okay. Well, now that the Waldo kit is out, I'm going to go with the 2013 home centennial kit.
Is that the white one?
The white one with the big new crest.
I remember watching you play with that jersey, man.
It's simple, but just elegant, and I love that kit.
A little boring for me, Graham. That's
boring. That's as bad as it gets.
Yeah,
geez.
I want a kit to pop. So on that note, I'm going with the 1994 away kit.
Ooh, yeah.
It's the like the denim with the stars on it. Yeah.
I had it. Yeah. I had it on my list. I didn't know you'd pick
it. You already got the Waldos.
Yeah,
so
but
you know,
man, I wanted that one.
But if you're going with the secondary kit, get aggressive, get creative here. That one's good. And that's an iconic one. And as a person who was a high schooler when that World Cup happened, those kits will always stand out. A little nostalgia for me.
Yeah, I remember that.
All right, so I'm going with that. Let's see. Next, I'm going to go with the 2018-19 home kit because it's got a little Waldo to it. It's white with the red and blue stripes. So a little overcomplicated for me, but got the Waldo. The 2018-19 home kit there at the top. The white ones with the kind of the blue and red stripes. Yeah.
Nice pick.
Back to you, Graham.
I'm going to go with the 2002-2003 home kit, the white one.
Oh, yeah. Brian McBride scoring against Mexico.
I see Brian McBride. I see Eddie Pope.
Little Landon and Little Beasley.
They're swimming in their jerseys.
Those were big jerseys back in the day. And
they
were. Too,
do you remember those? They had like the built-in undershirt. That was impossible. Oh. If you were like sweating, it was so hard to get on and off.
Oh, I don't remember. Did you ever wear that jersey?
As a kid, I bought it. Yeah.
So you wouldn't necessarily want to play in it. You just like the look of it.
It looked brutal to play in, but
fashion purposes.
That era of national team was fun to watch.
Okay, so now, Benny, you get two picks.
I get two. I know for sure which one. This was my actual number one. I picked the Waldo because I knew you guys were going to steal it. My number one was one that I got to wear, 2007 Copa America, the blue with the white stripes. I remember wearing them.
The pinstripes.
Yeah, I remember seeing them on TV. They popped.
Mm-hmm.
They were loud. It had a little bit of that effect that you're talking about, mm-hmm. where you know who it is. You know it's the U.S. team, and I wouldn't mind that being one of the maybe a mainstay. I know it kind of came and went pretty quickly, but I really liked playing in that jersey, and I think it looked good on the guys. So I'll go with that as my number two jersey. The number three, I'm going to go one that, you know, I'm a little bit scared what Nate's going to say about my boring choice, but it's right next to the one that you chose, Zeus. So 2014, 2015 home, white with the collar. It's sleek. It's clean. I think I don't know. I don't think it's boring. I think it kind of is just there. It's kind of bold and quiet at the same time. What do you think, Nate?
I think it looks just like the England national team. If you took the three Lions crest and put it over the USA crest, I would think it was England.
So it's dumb?
I don't like it for that standpoint.
Boring.
You know,
I get it. I'm sorry. I can't please everybody.
No, you can't. Okay, back to me. I'm going to go with the jersey that I wore. It's got a little bit of a Waldo kit
built into it. Going here.
But I'm
going
to go 2017 away Gold Cup kit.
So the navy blue and red stripes. So it's like correct. Waldo, except for navy blue instead of white.
It's got the Waldo vibes. And what I really liked about there's a little detail that you can't really see on this picture, but it had some stars going down the shoulders that I thought was pretty slick. We won the Gold Cup in that jersey. So
it's a nice jersey. I had it in mind.
I had that one marked for sure. Okay, I'm going to go 2019 away. It's got a little bit of that Waldo like vibe because it's got the red on red stripes, and because I like bold, I like the bright red. I don't like the darker reds that they would wear a lot of times. I like the bright red because I think when you're playing a sport, you want to pop. You want the other team to see you coming, you know. And so that's going to be that one. And then my second one, I have mixed emotions on the sash. You know, some people love. I don't love the sash in general, but it does kind of make me think of USA soccer. And a nostalgic one, 2010 away.
Oh.
I had that kit. You hate that one?
No, I wanted that one.
That was
good.
That was my choice as well.
I wore that one.
Yeah,
that was the USA versus England match. The watch party in the Power and Light District that year when the England goalkeeper Green boxed
Dempsey Banger?
boxed it into his own goal. That was the first time I ever got the feeling of what it was like to be at a U.S. national team watch party, like a real World Cup watch party. I was in the Johnnies in the Power and Light District, and people were literally climbing the walls when that goal scored. I've got video of him climbing up the light poles and stuff, and that's what hooked me on the game in many ways. So that kit is personal to me. So I got the sash.
You stole my sash jersey that I was going to choose. But I will stick with the one next to it, the 2010-11 home sash jersey. It's the first jersey I ever wore for the national team.
Oh, wow.
My first goal with the team as well. So, yeah, I'm going to go with that white sash jersey.
I don't even know which one it is. Oh, I see it right next to
yeah.
it.
It's like a hint of a sash.
Got it. Is it my turn?
Yep.
I think this is your final
pick. I
got to
pick two, right? I am going to go with one of Zeus brought this up, and I want to say he's probably right that it was the first U.S. jersey that I ever wore. And that was the 2006 to 2008 home. It's a white with the stripe on the side going down, just the vertical stripe with mm-hmm. red and blue.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's probably a little bit more for the memories right. and right. I don't think it's something, you know, extraordinary in terms of all the other types of, you know, displays that you have out there, but it does, I think, mean something to me. And I think it's also sleek. It's nice. To some extent, it's hopefully not too similar to any other jerseys like England or whatever, right? You can kind of tell right. the colors there. Yep. So yep. I'll take that one as my fourth jersey. And the fifth one, let's see. I'm going to go real old school here.
Ooh.
Okay? We're going back like AYSO looking days here.
Yeah.
We're going to go with the 1991 home yeah. jersey. So the white
it.
One
yeah.
with the... Is that an Adidas jersey?
Adidas, yeah.
Right? It's, with
it's
the three
yeah.
on the sleeve there. I'm going to go with that. It is low key pretty cool. I'm sure that that might have been the one that was wearing when we heard the kick heard around the world, right? Caligiuri's goal. It's one of those jerseys. I don't know which one, but I'm going to take 1991 home.
That's a good one. That's actually I like that one. I had it marked.
Yeah, no, I agree. Good pick. Yeah, I feel like that jersey would like fly off the shelves these days as like mm-hmm. a throwback.
Oh, retro.
Yeah.
Retro look. Cool. Yeah, I don't hate anyone's picks.
Nate
hated a couple of ours.
Yeah. Well,
do I have one more? You guys have one more because
yeah,
I went first. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, your last one.
You guys get one more each.
All right. Better not take mine. Let's see here. This is going to be on the fly.
Zeus, what was the one called? The one with the popsicle looking one?
Bomb pop, yeah, bomb pop. Yeah. I'll throw.
You
bomb
wore
pop.
That. I remember.
I was gonna take the bomb yeah. pop.
I'm
man.
So glad. If I knew that you were gonna take it, I would 100% said it.
I know.
God. Good call. I had mentioned the bomb pop earlier, and I'll go back to it. Yeah, that's. I mean, it's a World Cup jersey.
I just see you wearing that jersey.
We wore that. Yeah. Against Ghana. I'm going bomb pop.
Man,
sorry, Nate.
Darn it. And the funny thing is when sorry. It came out, I hated it.
Really? And now you
yeah.
love it.
But then because of the memories it got associated with it.
It's got some personality
yeah,
now.
It's got like, man, those are my guys were wearing that one, you know? Oh, yeah. So, yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to go 1998-99 away. The red one with the collar. I don't know. I like the red. I told you guys that. So since you stole yeah. mine, Graham.
I saw that. Those are...
I don't have any memories associated with
I've got some
with
memories
it,
with those.
That's one that I remember of like Eddie Pope. And
yeah, yeah.
Is that
yeah.
the Brian McBride bloody head?
That might be.
Bloody
the,
eye?
It might be. Yeah. Yeah. There you go. All right. So that's our five aside. Leave a comment. Send us a message. Let us know what you think. Do you agree with me that we need to stick with the Waldos? Do you
that
have any other kits
jersey.
That you like?
That yeah. was my jersey, Nate, not yours. I know you made a claim for it, but that was my jersey. You can't yeah. claim that it's yours now.
No, but my take uh-huh. that we need to stick with it. Do you agree with me on that? That should be our jersey every time.
I said my piece.
That's for the next segment.
All right, yeah, stay tuned. Listen, everybody, we want to make sure that we get the word out on this. So like, subscribe, write a review, tell a friend, wherever you get your podcasts, this is Heart and Goal. Your home for everything involving Kansas City and the World Cup in 2026. We'll see you next time.